This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Ready for the weekend. Combine continuing in Indianapolis. We've got conference tournament games going on right now for the mid-majors. The major conferences will be all next week, which will lead, of course, into Selection Sunday. However, we've got a lot of news in the NFL, and it's not the same old, because we've been watching Aaron Rodgers and that story continue to come and go, come and go, come and go, day after day to figure out where he's going, and there has been no movement on the Lamar Jackson contract situation. But one of the things that you can get at the Combine, or at least this week, is you get to see coaches and GMs talk about their team, and it's one of the few places where they all gather. Right, we talk about the Roger Goodell, for example, at the Super Bowl. He kind of gives a state of the state a speech where he gets asked a million questions about everything, ranging from officials to possible expansion to international games. Everything is on the table. But the Combine is the one place where you can get a captive media audience, and everybody is there because that's where the party is, right? That's where the action is. So occasionally you'll get a general manager come up and talk about his quarterback, for example. Rand Carthon did that, a new general manager for the Tennessee Titans, committing to Ryan Tannehill. But Mike McCarthy was able to talk about taking over the offense for the Dallas Cowboys and his philosophical differences with Kellen Moore. Now, what made it interesting is Mike McCarthy was an offensive coordinator. He's an offensive guy. And this season, he's going to be taking over the play calling. Now, That's a big ask, because even if you have experience doing it as the head coach, you like to defer that to somebody else. You like to actually have an offensive coordinator. But it's year four under Mike McCarthy, and he feels like the offense needs to have his philosophical footprint and fingerprints all over it. Kellen Moore wanted a shootout. Kellen Moore wanted to run up the score. Kellen Moore wanted to put a lot of points on the board. Now, my first thought when I heard that was, wait. But that's what he's supposed to do, right? I mean, in the end, that's what he should be doing as the offensive coordinator. His job is to put as many points. That's how he's graded, for crying out loud. Like wins and losses come and go. You can have a great offense and do your job and still lose games. But how you evaluate an offensive coordinator, there's a lot of ways to do that, but one of them is the efficiency of the offense. Right? Did it look seamless that they went up and down the field every time they had the ball? But what if they don't, right? And that was Mike McCarthy's big point. He's getting a little skewered for this because it looks like he wasn't appreciative of what Kellen Moore was trying to do, which was aggressively attack downfield in a day and age in the NFL where that feels like you need to do that. You know, we look at teams now and we don't even look at who are the better defensive teams in the NFL. We look at how good the offense is. Think about how many times when we talk about the AFC, for example, and we do it a lot because the AFC is so loaded with young quarterbacks. But do we ever say, well, this team could be effective even though they don't have one of those young quarterbacks because they have a very good defense? We don't. And we look at is Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson when he plays, right? Like Deshaun Watson, if he finally comes together. We look at that conference, and what do we see? Quarterbacks, quarterbacks, quarterbacks. And what are those quarterbacks doing? Are they handing the ball off to a running back? No, they're going downfield. They're attacking. They're putting points on the board. They're exciting to watch. McCarthy is an offensive guy, but understands the value of defense. Now, you can take those comments as, boy, what exactly does he want to do as offensive play caller? And he talked about wanting a balance, right? Wanting to be able to run the ball and throw the ball, which I didn't think the Cowboys were a Dak Prescott throwing machine. I mean, I still look at Tony Pollard as being pretty effective, and they are a pretty balanced offense. But McCarthy made a larger point. And I think the second part of his comments about his philosophical differences with Kellen Moore need to be properly evaluated. Because he said, look, I did this before. We were in Green Bay, and we did this with Aaron Rodgers. We ran up the score. We were an explosive offense, but we destroyed our defense. We were sometimes we would go down the field and score, and sometimes we had to be off the field quickly. He doesn't want to destroy his defense. And he understands, and I think that's really kind of when you talk balance. I think it's not so much that he's like, I want to make sure we're giving the running backs, and they're out. I think he's saying, look, I got to keep my offense on the field as long as possible. Every offensive coordinator wants to do that. My philosophy of doing that is to have a balanced offensive tack to make sure it happens, not throwing the ball every down where we could be off the field in 25 seconds. I think that's a worthwhile second part of his statement, because in the end he saw it firsthand. He said, "Look, we would get into shootouts with teams, and then we would get beat. And it wasn't until we figured out how to balance in Green Bay that we finally did go to a Super Bowl." Now he's under a lot of pressure, because when a coach takes over play calling duties like he's going to do, it now rests on him. It's easy to dismiss a coordinator and keep your job. Head coaches do it all the time. But what do you do if the offense doesn't do that or doesn't execute that, and Dak Prescott doesn't have a year where we're all really, really impressed? Because I don't even know if Dak Prescott is one. We talked about this before. Dak Prescott is one of those quarterbacks that people just love to skew. They really do. And I never found why. I don't think he's the best quarterback in the league, but he's not a fourth-tier quarterback in the league, right? Like, I love when people say, I would take backup John Kitna over him. Like, stuff like that. Like, drives me crazy. Like, Kitna's not even in the league anymore. You would still take him over Dak Prescott. But there's something about Dak Prescott that brings out people's sort of over-criticism. When the fact of the matter is, he's a legitimate NFL starting quarterback. Whether or not he's an elite quarterback, that's a separate argument. But he deserves to be a starting quarterback somewhere in this league. He's not a third stringer. He's not lucky to have a job. Being the Cowboys quarterback takes a lot of that kind of scrutiny. Tony Romo felt it too. Tony Romo went through that. Tony Romo could have had a nice, quiet career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and have been successful and fine. But because he's the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, we expect that position to be way up here, because the franchise is way up here in the public eye. Now Mike McCarthy has nobody else to blame if that does not come to fruition. If Dak fails to deliver, the offense does well but not good enough. And look, McCarthy, at the end of all this, sort of said something that was rather cliche. And it's kind of head coaching speak, you know. I don't want to be the number one offense in the league. I don't want to be the number one team in the league. Yeah, all right, put that on a Hallmark card. Great. But let me make this. You could be the number one team in the league, win a Super Bowl. But if you don't, how you're going to keep your job is if the offense shows that it's one of the top offenses in the league. So, yeah, you're striving for that ultimate goal, everybody is. But in order to get that goal, what do you want to look like? Can you be the eighth best offense in the NFL and win a Super Bowl? Sure. Can you be the 12th best offense and win a Super Bowl? Yeah, good luck. There is going to be a point where he's going to have to show that the offense that he's running, that he's play calling, is one of the most effective offenses in the NFL. And not because you can do that and keep, like, Jerry Jones is not going to make a decision on Mike McCarthy's future in Dallas based on statistics. In the end, it's an emotional feeling of, are we going in the right direction? Do we have the right guy that is guiding this? But the reality of it is, to kind of throw that out there, you're no different than any other coach that's in the NFL vying for a Super Bowl, but you're in a position to run an offense that better look like it's being run well. Kellen Moore, you may have been disagreeing with his philosophy, but he understood what that job was. And that job and the way he was evaluated was how good that offense was in terms of its effectiveness. I don't think he was calling all these plays to get the offense off the field quickly. That's just what sometimes happens when you are overly aggressive. So to me, it's kind of an interesting season in Dallas with McCarthy, a guy that we wondered was on the hot seat anyway, but a quarterback that people scrutinize almost to too much of an extreme, combined with a head coach that's now taking over the play calling. I mean, look, he can wax poetically all he wants about, I really enjoy being in the room again. I really enjoy developing players again. Like, all of those things that he did while he was an offensive coordinator and a wide receivers coach and a quarterbacks coach, as his career blossomed and turned into a head coach of the Green Bay Packers back in 2006, which led to, in 2020, becoming the Dallas Cowboys head coach. But the reality of it is that the proof is going to be on the field. And if Dak Prescott continues to be a quarterback that people feel like, bang, 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 the arrows can come out on everything he does, on every single interception, on every single decision, on how he looks downfield, this is, in the end, going to come down on him. So one of the things, again, that I like about Combine Week, it is a sort of a potpourri and a wild smorgasbord of coaches and general managers being able to get to the microphone and talk about things for the upcoming season, even though the upcoming season is months down the line. We've got a number of steps to get to that point, but right now, with the season just fresh, they're making some very interesting comments. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. Good Friday morning to you as we roll along. Got a lot to dissect, and we'll do so as we continue on Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up this hour, we saw the Dallas Mavericks and the Philadelphia 76ers last night, and Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving exploded, combined for 82 points. But coming up, I'll tell you why that's not going to do very much in the postseason. But I've lived in Nashville for 10 years, a little over 10 years, and I live in a barrier. There's different parts of the country have different sort of weather things, right? If you live in Florida, you worry about hurricanes. If you live in California, you're concerned about earthquakes, and maybe in the Northeast or other parts of the Midwest, you know, nor'easters, snowstorms, things like that. Here in Tennessee, we deal with tornadoes. You know, every now and then a tornado warning comes. But a lot of times the weather people will give you like way advanced warning. They'll say, look, we are seeing a system and it's coming. And you know what? We think by 10 o'clock at night, we have got conditions for a tornado. And so people start preparing. You know, they figure out, all right, what do you know? So schools got canceled yesterday. So schools are canceled today because we've got high winds and whatnot. And, you know, a lot of times people, like, this is the one thing about, I used to say this a lot about when I was living in New England. We'd have no school. And in your area, it might be fine. But in, like, the rural part of the town, where the school buses have to go, it's not fine, right? It's hilly, it's icy, so they just end up canceling school. It's the same thing here. They cancel school. They just prep because basically the schools are saying, hey, they're your kids. If there is a tornado, you take care of them. We're not going to put them in some sort of middle of the school building kind of thing. But last night, so my wife and I were really nervous last night. Like, hey, all right, you know, a tornado. But we don't get tornadoes in my part of Nashville. It's like we live in a town called Spring Hill, and there's hills, and it sort of breaks up the wind a little bit. And we can get high winds, and occasionally there's minor ones, what we've seen in the 10 years that we've been here. But people who have lived here for a long time have told me, this area doesn't really get the big ones that, you know, rip up neighborhoods and whatnot. But still, you know, you're always on alert. So I was watching the weather last night, and it was like 10 o'clock last night. I was watching the weather, and like I start feeling the wind outside, and it's really creepy. Like, wind is a scary thing, man. Like, wind can be a really, like, when it's really flying, it has that high pitch sort of sound.
Mm-hmm.
People say, like, in tornadoes, it sounds like a freight train is coming, like a train whistle. And so I was just sitting in my office last night. I was just on the computer. It was like 10 o'clock, 10:30. And I'm just hearing,
getting louder and louder. And I don't know what to do. Like, there's no tornado watch. They're showing it like, all right, you got to watch this. But I don't know where to go. Like in the center of my house, there's a bathroom.
Yeah.
I think it was built that way because of that. I don't know what to do. I'm like, do I put the laptop down? And I'll just wait till I hear the siren go off.
Just wait until the window shatters.
Just wait till I hear. There's only one time I heard that thing where I was really nervous because I was driving home, and I think it was from a basketball game, and I was driving home and I heard it as I came in to town. I'd gotten off the highway, I'd gone down this road. And as I was getting closer, I heard it. And I went, uh-oh. Oh, boy, I'm not even home yet. I've still got a couple of miles to go, and it's already blasting.
So I remember when Hurricane Harvey hit here.
Yeah.
We had, like, that first night. That was the worst night of all. I mean, most of the time, you know, we were just dealing with rain, and, you know, our streets drained pretty quickly, so we were fine with that. But it was that first night. We were getting tornado warnings every 20 minutes, every 30 minutes. Just kept updating all night long. And at one point, you could just hear all the noise outside. And my wife goes, Ron, can you go check it out? And I'm like, you want me to go outside?
Yeah, I know. What are we going
like,
to do?
You know, I don't think the insurance policy on me is updated. I don't know if you want me to go yet.
Yeah, well, I thought about this last night. I go, you want to go to the patio and bunker stuff down? Like, things are bunkered down pretty good just because it's winter. We haven't really uncovered everything. But I'm like, I ain't going out there.
I know.
I'm not going out there. It's scary.
And then we found, I mean, it must have been, I don't know if it touched down, but, you know, when you walked out the next day, there was a little damage. I mean, there was branches. There was, we had a street sign that was now parallel to the ground. You know, just one of those, hey, you're on this street and this street. That's the intersection of the, you know, those type of street signs. It was parallel to the ground. So I was like, all right, that must have been something.
When we went on a family vacation once, we had some friends, you know, house sit, you know, whatnot, come to the house, take care of the pets and whatnot. And I bought for our patio, and we have an open patio, so we don't have, like, fences. We just have this open patio. I bought one of those boxes, kind of like those plastic boxes that hold our seat cushions,
yeah,
for the patio furniture. So we put them in there when it rains and stuff. And he showed me a picture because there was a massive wind gust that destroyed my neighbor's trampoline, just annihilated the trampoline, knocked over my grill, despite a propane tank being attached to it, just went boom. This thing tore the plastic box to pieces, just ripped it apart. Pieces were of it were everywhere. The stuff inside blew everywhere. The box itself is completely destroyed. All the attachments, screw attachments, burst apart. And now I got pieces of this plastic box in my garage I still got to figure out how to get rid of. But I was thinking to myself, all right, now that's a plastic box. All right, that's fine. And I'm a human being with a lot of muscle fiber. But if I was outside at that time, I might have been knocked out cold.
Right.
That might have blew me down to the ground. I could have cracked my head open.
Could have been Joe's dad.
Yeah. They're saying it was like a 60-mile-an-hour wind gust. They came and just ripped through, was bending over, you're right, branches, tree branches. They came to the house, and like the backyard was just destroyed with stuff. Neighbor's backyard, all stuff everywhere. We had pieces of that guy's trampoline all over our yard.
Yeah, that's always my wife's fear, because we have a trampoline in our backyard. She's like, man, one of these days, it's going to end up in someone's yard. Uh-huh, and I'm like, well, they can keep it.
Yeah, that's right. I know, and I didn't know my neighbor, but I was picking it up, and I just dropped it off. Went in the backyard, just dropped off the pieces, the trampoline, just destroyed it. And just like, picture the trampoline. Imagine if you had big, huge, giant hands, and he just picked up the trampoline and just crushed it,
right,
like a soda can. That's what it was. That's what the wind did. So yeah,
I know it's scary stuff. I mean,
I'm not interested in that at all. Like, not going outside. If it takes my grill, I'll buy another one. I'm not going out there. No chance.
Yeah, I felt bad for my son. He had a baseball game last night. It was windy here. You know, we were getting those good wind gusts. But I mean, you just felt bad for all those kids out on the field because the wind was blowing the dirt.
Yeah,
and you would see like these little tornadoes appear, like, you know, the little spiral things. I mean, I know they're not tornadoes, but it just constantly, and I'm like, man, how are these kids playing? And then don't mention, you know, don't I'll have to tell you about the fly ball sometimes.
I almost texted you last night going, hey, just be on the alert. I don't know what I'm going to see in the morning. I don't know if I'm going to have power. I don't know. Like you know,
these it's Armageddon.
People, listen. The weather people don't make their money telling you everything's going to be okay.
No, right? Of course
That's not. These weather guys on TV, they're like, all right, Goodlettsville, hunker down. It's coming. Like they were like on the map showing people the cities. Like, here's this. They're not trying to scare you, but they also want you to keep on tuning in.
No, they literally
make
go.
Make sure you down our weather app because we give you continuous updates.
They literally will go like, you know, your city looks like this now. This is what it'll look like 24 hours from now. And it's just, you know, utter chaos. And
These guys, I mean, here's the thing. When you do sports, right, on TV or news on TV, you don't generate the content. You may write the content, but the content is what it is, right? If I'm writing, let's say, Nashville sports, and I'm like, Vanderbilt, blah, 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 blah. And then I write Nashville Predators, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going with the news. Weather guys, that's their forecast. They put the effort into that. They're studying that stuff. They're reading barometer charts and weather patterns, and they're watching clouds and Doppler radar. And then they're saying, based on my experience knowing this information, this is my findings, and they're proud to display it. But they also are, you know, they know that, you know, it's really funny because I feel like if you could go into any city and you say, hey, who's the news anchor, the top news anchor of Channel 5? They probably can name it. If I say who's the top sports anchor, a few people can name it, but I bet everybody knows the weather guy. I bet everybody watches the weather. Like, oh, yeah, that's Don Smith. Oh, he's been doing the weather for 25 years. The weather guys are big deals.
Well, I always look at it, too. They're like Kevin Harlan before the show.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, Kevin Harlan reacts and then gives this, you know, over-emphatic celebration of what's going on, and we're just, like, eating it all up. That's them before the show happens.
That's right.
Because sometimes the show happens, and it's just like, wah, wah, and you're like, they're like, yeah, I guess it didn't happen.
Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, they're all excited before, yeah. And don't get me wrong, they don't mind saying, hey, by the way, coming up a three-day weekend, we got sunny skies coming up for you. Highs in the 80s on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. A little cold front coming in on Monday down.
No, our weather guys were hyped because there was a storm rolling in because they know that this weekend it's going to be in the 70s this weekend, clear skies.
Yeah, I could almost tell last night that guy was a little excited. Like, okay, bucker down, people. We've got some big winds and some storms coming. And oh, boy.
Hope you got your canned goods.
Yeah, man. Get to those shelters. All right, coming up, the Mavericks with the win last night over the Philadelphia 76ers. Luka and Kyrie put on a show, but how long is that show going to last come April and maybe into May? We'll talk about that next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, I want to thank Anthony Pepe and the Diehards. I was on the show last night to talk about the start of the Formula One season last night, and those guys are really fun. They are really, really fun. I had a great time. So, a bunch of New England guys shared my New England growing up in New Hampshire experience. Talked a little racing, but mostly it was a good time. Anthony Pepe does a really good job. So,
see, but you don't say that because now they're not gonna. We're not going to be able to get their heads in the studio.
No, that's very true. That's very true. If I keep doing that, it's just going to pump them up even more.
Yeah.
They informed me that they liked our promos. They said their promos are really
fun. Well, that's the first thing they've said right all year.
Right. Exactly. But you know what was funny about that? I was waiting to go on, and just as they were coming out of the break, Anthony, you know, they're Boston guys.
Right.
They talked about what the score was of the Bruins game last night.
Naturally.
Because the Bruins were playing Buffalo, and they were killing Buffalo. And they brought it up. Boston got its 101st point, the fastest any team has ever gotten 100 points in an NHL season. Like, seriously, when it rains, it pours. I know I did this like 2 days ago. When it rains, it pours for a city. You don't need every team to be in contention for something. But if you get the fan base excited about something, and if I'm a Bruins fan, and I'm in Boston, I'm watching this team every night they play. They are fabulous. They are fantastic. They might roll through the Stanley Cup. They absolutely are killing everybody they play. They've won 8 in a row now, something like that. Just crazy. But that was the first thing. They kind of mentioned it before they brought me on. And I was like, yeah, Boston guys just enjoying Boston sports because it keeps on delivering. So the Dallas Mavericks last night, a big game against the Philadelphia 76ers. When I say big, it's just because it's a matchup. It's a good matchup. Luka Doncic scored 42 points, and Kyrie Irving pitched in with 40 points. They had 82 of their 133 points in a win against the Philadelphia 76ers. So people have been wondering how this is going to work, right? And there's been a lot of speculation about, look, you got these two guys, and can they gel together, and what can they do in the playoffs? What they did last night was outstanding. I mean, absolutely outstanding. I mean, Kyrie Irving was 15 of 22, knocked down 6 3-pointers. Luka Doncic was 13 of 22. He knocked down 7 3-pointers. Again, they combined for 82 points. They both had over 40. What's wrong with that? The problem is that you can't sense that there is anything else other than these two guys when they get to the postseason. And don't get me wrong, and I've said this before, you kind of shorten your bench in the postseason, but it doesn't mean you go 5-6 guys. It just means you don't necessarily go 12. But the Dallas Mavericks are going to be an easy book. And that is both of these guys, and that's about it. Dallas is going to need a guy like Reggie Bullock to step up and score. They're going to need a time when both of those guys or one of those guys is going to be really shut down. They're going to need Dwight Powell to do something, right? They're going to need Christian Wood to do something. I mean, Max Kiebler is going to have to do something. There needs to be something else. This is going to be a two-player team. That's it. Everything runs through these guys. Now, don't get me wrong. That's what happens sometimes when you have these mega teams. But Dallas doesn't play very good defense. They've lost some of the defensive players when they traded those two guys away, Spencer Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith, to the Brooklyn Nets. And and if they don't convince Kyrie Irving that being a Dallas Maverick is what he should do for his career, they're going to lose him too. This trade was made for a run now. And even though they won this game at home, and even though those two guys did great and played well, this isn't going to work in a 7-game series against anybody. This is not going to be effective. This is a first-round exit scenario. Seriously. The Western Conference is too loaded. The Dallas Mavericks have to have something else, and they don't need a guy scoring 37 points. That's not what I'm asking. And I'm not asking for the offense to run through Reggie Bullock. That's ridiculous. The offense is going to run through Kyrie, and it's going to run through Luka. But you better keep the other team's defense honest enough with some other good players, or this is going to be quick. Part of the joy of postseason basketball is all the evaluation that happens through a long 7-game series, especially in the first round. Now, again, the series get a little tighter as we have less basketball to deliver, so games occur more frequently in a 7-game series. But those first rounds, you could play Monday and not play again until Thursday, right? I mean, there's a lot of space in those first round games because the NBA wants to give everybody the national exposure. So games, you know, can be like, you could play Monday, Wednesday, and then not play till Saturday. You could play Monday, Thursday, your game 3 on Sunday. It really does depend on how they shake it out for television. But there is long gaps. And that means Jason Kidd is going to have to configure something else to shake up this Dallas Mavericks team when they get to the playoffs. Because when they get to the playoffs, there's a lot of potholes that are on the way in the Western Conference. We don't know how this is going to shake out seeding-wise, right? Like Phoenix just got Kevin Durant on the court on Wednesday in their game against the Charlotte Hornets. And right now, Phoenix is a 4 seed. Right? Can they catch Sacramento and be a 3? Can Dallas move up ahead of Golden State with a few more wins? What about the Clippers? Clippers are playing bad basketball right now, but what if they get hot? We don't know how this is going to be, you know, situate itself. We don't know if the Lakers are going to be in this party. They might get into the bottom 4 and get into the play-in tournament. They're only a game out, by the way, against New Orleans. And look, the Lakers won the other night against Oklahoma City. That's a team they got to beat, by the way, right? Because right now it's a Lakers, Portland, and Oklahoma City that are kind of vying for an entry spot into the bottom of the Western Conference, like get into this play-in thing. They don't have LeBron, obviously, because of the foot injury. They won without Anthony Davis. LeBron is going to be evaluated in a couple of weeks. He could be coming back for an even more important stretch run than the stretch run he thought he was going to be a part of after the All-Star break. But don't look at Minnesota and Utah and New Orleans as three teams that are just going to be really tough to beat. I mean, they're as mediocre as the Lakers are. But if you get LeBron in the playoffs, that becomes a problem, right? So if you're Dallas, you're not looking at an easy first-round game, right? You're more than likely going to be playing one of the top teams in the Western Conference. They're going to figure you out pretty good. And so there's going to have to be something else. So, no, I'm not going to go overboard with the excellence of Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. And, no, I'm not going to jump on the, everybody buckle up now, Dallas is coming. Yeah, that was a good win against a Sixers team that's got to start playing well to sort of get themselves near the top of the Eastern Conference. Right now they're third behind Milwaukee and Boston, and they got to hold off Cleveland. But no, that's not how you're going to win games in the NBA. You just don't give the ball to two guys with two different styles of play and have them hope that they score 30-plus points. And if you need them to score 40 points each, you're getting swept. So that's going to be not an easy assignment because Luka's an MVP-level player. But Luka has shown in the past that he can't carry this Mavericks team into the playoffs very far. And getting Kyrie should have helped, but it helped at a cost of some pretty good defensive players and some good role players as well. But that's the cost of getting Kyrie Irving. They weren't going to get Kyrie Irving for nothing. They were going to have to make a sacrifice. Now, that leads to the bigger question, right? Is do I disagree with this move for Dallas? Not really. Not really. And here's why. Do I think Dorian Finney-Smith and Spencer Dinwiddie were good role players for what they brought to the Mavericks? Sure. But, look at the West, right? Look at the way there's different teams and how they play, right? If you are trying to win the East, yeah, okay. So let's say you're the Miami Heat. You're going to have to figure out a way to beat, let's say, the Knicks, maybe in the first round or somewhere else, or whatever. But your real objective is to figure out Giannis and Chris Middleton and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown with the Celtics, right? That's what you're trying to do. And you may not be able to do that because, again, each one of those teams has extra guys that can chip in and play well. If you are in the West and you're Dallas, who are you targeting? Denver? Well, yeah, two-time MVP, good solid bench, well-coached. Memphis? Phoenix? Golden State, if they get their act together, where are you targeting? And are you just you're just targeting with these two guys? That's it. There's nothing else. Think about the Golden State Warriors, for example, the big three, right? But how many times in their championships, and when they had Durant, would there be somebody else that would play well that you'd go, hey, look out, right? Kevon Looney, for example, or somebody along those lines, where they would have a game that really was outside of the normal predictable players that should have good names. I think of Matt Dellavedova, right, of the Cavaliers. Dallas needs that individual because Luka and Kyrie scoring 30 plus a night, 35 a night, that's not the recipe to win in the playoffs. So, yeah, was that an impressive win last night? Yeah, it was kind of neat to see those two guys really chip in, and I liked what Kyrie said. I had to join the party. But when it's a 7-game party, you're going to need somebody else to join you as well. The party better not – I mean, let's make 3 a crowd. Let's make 4 a crowd, all right, on the Dallas Mavericks roster. It's Wake Up Call, Sportsman Brady.
Ron Colbert continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Colbert.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It is Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. Oh, remember I just told you that we had a kind of a tornado watch yesterday?
Yeah, you got another one?
Yeah, well, no, there was another thing that happened in Nashville that I thought I wanted to tell you about.
All right.
So you know that country singer Morgan Wallen?
I've heard of him.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why they do this. Why do they think these things are going to go over the way they think they're going to go over, right? So he's releasing an album, and the big news yesterday was, hey, on Friday at Bridgestone Arena, the local arena here in town, the big one with the Predators play, Morgan Wallen is going to give is going to perform a free concert. Free concert for one of the biggest music acts in country music right now.
So only like 20 people are going to show
right,
up, right?
Right. So, no, so this is what they did. They said, Thursday starting at 10 a.m., get in line and every person will get two tickets. What do you think happened yesterday?
Only 20 people showed up.
Yeah, like they were standing outside going, I wonder if anybody's interested in Morgan Wallen tickets. They had a line that looped three times.
Not a surprise at all.
Unbelievable. People were getting there before the sun rose.
Yeah, because you know what the, you know what the issue is?
To hang out for the tickets.
Like, you could probably get away with it if you did that, like, you know, in L.A.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, you know, I know country music is huge, but, you know, L.A. or San Francisco or something. You know, maybe a cold weather place. Throw it in like North Dakota at this point. But Nashville, I'm certain that town has Morgan Wallen roads.
It was crazy. Like the scene was insane. And here was the other thing too, right? They put non-transferable, but there was no way. They were just handing them out. So there was people started selling them. They're like, I got Morgan Wallen tickets.
Yeah.
These things go for hundreds of dollars, right? When he's on tour anyway. And now people were just basically given almost $1,000 worth of free stuff. Like, where I got them. Who wants them?
Well, there are no Pokemon cards.
The Friday night album. And I say this cynically. Maybe I'm an old man. I get it. I remember the good old days when you used to, like, line up for sports tickets. Remember those days? Remember people would be like, World Series tickets going on sale. And everybody, they showed them lined up as people were getting ready to buy them. And people would bring out stuff. Movie premieres are famous for this, right? Star Wars especially.
Well, I waited for Phantom Menace. Yeah. I think I waited in line for at least an hour and a half.
Yep. Some people wait 2 days, right? They just plan a trip. They plan a thing. They make sure their line is set. They bring a chair and bring some snacks. This is kind of a tradition we do, but can you imagine being like on the security team and you're thinking to yourself, hey, okay, man, I got nothing. I got a thing going on. I got the SEC tournament next week at Bridgestone. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, by the way, Morgan Wallen's giving away. We're going to have a crowd of people here at 4 a.m. getting ready for a 10 a.m. ticket pickup. I've never waited in line for sports tickets, but
no, neither have I.
I always thought it would.
Waited in line for any kind of ticket. Well, except for to get into a theater after I'd already bought my ticket.
Right. Yeah.
The only thing I've ever waited in line for.
I thought to myself, okay, look, nothing happened. Something could have happened. Who knows? And you don't know if you'll crash a system if you say at 10 a.m. you can go online and all of a sudden you're dealing with electronic stuff. I personally like physical tickets. I talked about this when I went to the U.S. Grand Prix. Those things in my wallet make me nervous. I'd rather have a physical ticket. I know I can lose the physical ticket, but I just get a little nervous with them. But there's got to be, like, to say to people, be it, you know, look, we're giving them away at 10, but you know and I know you should be here at, like, 3 a.m. Like, that kind of thing, people just... Why not? And it doesn't matter what it is. If it's a popular anybody, if you know, whatever, that people will line up for it. I know. I remember when the Rockies went to the World Series in 2007. People were dying to wait in line. They wanted to wait in line for World Series tickets. They couldn't wait. And the Rockies said, "No, we're selling them online." And that angered a lot of people.
I don't blame
people
them.
Wanted the experience. They were like, "Well, first of all, what made them mad was you're not opening up the tickets to the people of Denver." If you sell them in person, you're opening it up to the people.
Yeah, you have
Denver.
To physically be there.
Yeah, they're at least in the city. What you've done is you've told the entire planet you can get World Series tickets.
Now,
so
I've
opened it up to everybody to buy them, sell them. Boston fans to buy them just as easily as Colorado Rockies fans could buy them. And believe me, Red Sox fans have no problems flying to support their team in a World Series.
No.
And you gave it just them as much a chance as anybody in Colorado.
Now, nowadays, the only thing you do line up for with regards to sports is to pick up your championship jersey right after the game.
That's right.
It's the only thing I see now.
That's what you got to do. Now, on the one hand, I'm glad that he said, look, Nashville, I love you guys. I'm going to put on a free concert for you people on Friday. And you know what? The people that got the tickets are people that are here. Right? Somebody from Chicago didn't buy them and then sell them on whatever. Like, people were here. But at the same time, I wouldn't even know. If my daughter said to me, "Dad, I want to go down there and get those tickets," I would be like, "Then go Wednesday. Like, but bring a tent. Like, what am I – like, what time should you go to pick up tickets or be in line for tickets of a popular thing if they say – they are being distributed at 10. Box office opens at 10. What time should you be there? The day before? Like, what? Like 2 o'clock in the morning? Like it's like that. You're not going to show up at 9:30. You know, I mean, it's like, oops. You know, it's a long time. So,
but I'm glad you brought Morgan Wallen up because I saw this. This was on Twitter. Barstool had this going on Twitter, right? They asked this question, or the way they posed it was this way. Anyone who thinks Morgan Wallen is more famous than Aaron Rodgers is brain dead.
I think it's
the other way around.
You think it's the other way around? You think Morgan Wallen is
I
more
think
famous?
Morgan Wallen is probably more known than Aaron Rodgers.
That's a good question. Aaron Rodgers has had 20 years almost of NFL. How long has Aaron Rodgers been in the league? 18 years?
Yep. Something like right? that.
He's been an NFL, not a star, because those first couple years he was behind Brett Favre. But let's say 15 years, he's been an NFL star. I don't know anything about country music. I don't know how long Morgan Wallen's been famous, but I have a daughter.
But see, that's the thing. I think,
and that's the only reason I know him.
I think that's the thing. It's you know, it goes to a certain niche of people. Like, you know,
absolutely.
You know, if you're not a sports fan, why would you know who Aaron Rodgers is?
Why would you know Aaron Rodgers is?
You know, has he transcended? I mean, for me, you know, if you said, oh, who's more famous, Morgan Wallen or Tom Brady? I'm going to say Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, without question. Everybody knows who he is.
Yeah, you've heard of him, but
he's gone through the barrier of sports and pop culture.
Like, right.
He's past that where he becomes just all over. Everybody knows who he is.
But has Aaron
Tiger
Rodgers
Woods the same way?
Tiger Woods. I mean,
yep.
Tiger Woods is up there with Muhammad Ali.
Absolutely,
Michael
One of
Jordan.
Most recognizable names in the world.
Yeah,
right.
But as you know, so is Aaron Rodgers there?
I want to know this: if I did not have a teenage daughter, would I know who Morgan Wallen was? Would I just living here in Nashville?
Right.
I think I would.
I think you
but
would
I don't know.
There.
I asked my daughter the other day, I said, give me your three favorite country music. She loves country music. I said, give me your three favorite country music artists. I knew one, Morgan Wallen. The other two I did not know.
Well, see,
now, they're brand new. And she says one of these groups just emerged, another group I never heard of. But I'm like, all right, well, maybe I should pay more attention, I guess.
I mean, was it Morgan Wallen was the one who got kicked off of Saturday Night Live or was set to host, right?
Right. He said,
so, I mean, that was a huge deal as well. I think that's why you might know him. You might have heard the name.
Might have heard of that, yeah.
You know, I think that's a bigger deal than being in a dark cave.
Yeah, that might be so. That's right, yeah, but being in a dark cave. Meanwhile, let's go back to your question. Morgan Wallen is at least doing a free concert in Nashville, and Aaron Rodgers is still like, I don't know. I don't know. It's supposed to come any day now.
A decision is tough. I'll let you know when I've made mine.
I'm waiting for all of the elements in my brain to sort of process all of this. I'll get back to you when it does.
I was told by my shaman guru that I have to wait for the tea leaves to settle 3 days after I've drank the tea.
Ugh, the Packers must be just beside themselves.
That's why I don't understand. Why won't they just make a decision? Why won't they just say, you know what, we're done?
They could. The problem is, what do they do?
Yeah, because they can't. You know, you can't
trade.
You're not going to release them. First of all, you're not going to release them. There's too much money on the table.
You can't trade him because he could go, I retired, and the other team goes, wait a minute, hold on. So they have to sit there and go, yeah. Do you mind telling? I'll tell you when I'm okay. We'll be here.
God, he's
just waiting for you.
He's really got the Packers by the packing peanuts, doesn't he?
He certainly does. All right, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up in hour number two as we roll along.